Mini episode 733 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Revelation Fight Organization. Follow them on the web at facebook.com/RFOMMA. Give them a like.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this FDH Lounge House of Cards Season 4 review. This is a spoiled review, not a spoiler-free one, such as the one we put up previously. Rick Morris and Jake Digman coming at you today, your FDH Lounge dignitaries, breaking down Season 4. It was a very enjoyable one, I thought, Diggs. What were your thoughts on it?
Oh, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I love the twists and turns and where it started as opposed to, and then, of course, where it ended up at. I'm a House of Cards junkie, so I thoroughly enjoy. My expectations going into the season and coming out of the season were completely separate.
Let me ask you this, because there was something that happened on there that it sort of struck me when you watch shows, and this is, I'd say, probably more network TV because of the length of it when they go 22 episodes, but occasionally you'll see it on cable shows of where you get like a mid-season finale and then they kind of pick up again. The way that when Frank came back from the assassination attempt, as I say, spoiler alert, we're going to have these a lot on here. Frank ultimately narrowly survives the assassination attempt, comes back. Didn't it feel almost like a new mini season or half season or whatever? I didn't expect them to go right to, oh, he's back, and we're not going to really talk about what happened when he was laying there in his hospital bed. Did that strike you at all?
No, you're absolutely right on that. And it was one of those, I actually didn't think about that until you just pointed it out. I guess okay. If it would have been a quote-unquote mid-season, like The Walking Dead does the 12 episodes, I believe, a season now. And if it would have been something akin to that, I could have seen that as being like the split point where it's like, this is the end, this is the mini break, and then coming from there. Yeah, they kind of just glossed over that. It was like this assassination attempt, you'd think like, you know, he's going to be in the hospital for a while, or maybe he's in a coma. Nope, he was already, but to the next episode, I do believe, he was already kind of, slowly working his way back into being back into control of things. But it was also very cool because it gave a chance for Claire to use her suggestive powers on the vice president, which was quite entertaining.
She did. Did you at any point, because this seems to be just me, I guess I've asked a couple people this and they're like, no, what are you talking about? But her and the VP, were you getting any vibes there before Frank recovered?
What do you mean by vibes?
Well, like the VP, like, it's been a long time since Marjorie died, and I haven't been with a woman in a while. Just when you talk about his loneliness. Like,
kind of, but that was kind of the subtle theme throughout the entire season, though, where Frank's kind of said that early on, like, he knew what was going on with her and the author of his name.
Yates.
Like, he knew something was going on anyway, and again, spoiler, he was okay with it.
Yeah,
it was kind of like, you know, they actually had a manservant in the White House at one point. All of us having breakfast together. So I think it's one of those where, again, it's her using her suggestive powers to him. But also at the end of the day, Claire is a master manipulator. And we saw that early on. I mean, building up to this, there's some the build up was it going to be, you know, Frank versus Claire? That's how season three ended.
Right.
With her leaving.
Right.
And this coming back and forth was, you saw through what she did with the congresswoman down in Texas and how she wanted to run for her seat and all this stuff and offering all these different things and all these on the table. She's out for herself.
She is. Well, the other thing, too, because season four started on the same note and actually kind of ramped it up from where season three went at the end. Think about the thing about her and we were laughing about this off air, just calling her Nev Campbell, but the assistant that she had, the political professional Leanne Harvey, putting out that KKK thing on Frank about his old man and the Klan down there before the South Carolina primary. So they went in even a more aggressive direction before I think, and it's been a while since I watched it, actually, but Frank kind of sued for peace on that, didn't he?
Yeah, that was kind of like the, okay, let's just, let's call a spade here. Well, I think also the benefit of it, it's kind of like the old school pro wrestling, where they realized they were much better as a tag team than they were as a singles unit.
Right.
And they actually need each other in order to be able to do what it is that they both want to accomplish. And before, it was all about her benefiting his career and all about making his career better. And now that she's gotten a little bit of a taste of power and she's used it against him, he kind of sees that, like, okay, well, now I have to use this. I need you.
Right.
Just as much as you need me, I need you.
Right. Almost kind of reminiscent from the way you were going there. Would you say a little bit like when Flair was teaming with Valentine against the Andersons in like 76, 77 in Mid-Atlantic?
I was born in 82, dude.
Okay. But you've read about it, though.
I'm aware of such things.
You're aware of it. Okay. Well, again, well,
I would equate it more to like when they tried to split the Hardy Boys up and they realized, wait, these guys are just awful against each other. No one wants to see this.
Yeah, well. And then 8 years later, they did a reprise, unfortunately. And then in TNA, they're doing another reprise.
I saw a video on the Facebook, not to get off topic on this, but I saw a video on the Facebook of something with, like, them in the backyard and Matt Hardy looking like he like Rogue from X-Men. And I'm like, I can't believe that's actually on a national television show. But anyway, back to
it's
House
hard,
of Cards.
It's hard to believe. It is, yeah. House of Cards, we would be insulting it by comparing it to a project like Impact Wrestling, I'm afraid. But it was a great season, I really thought. And in my estimation, maybe the best. I mean, I don't know how I would rank them in my head, but I definitely liked it better than 3. Let's just start there. And maybe that's as far as I would go, because I don't know if I like it more than 1. 1 had a lot going for it. 2... I guess I sort of put 2 and 3 together. To me, 1 and 4 are the best, and I thought that maybe 4 might have been the best.
It'd be hard pressed for me to argue that point. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was one of those it's weird, but like Netflix has changed the game of how we view television.
Right.
So it's like back in the day, you know, it would be the water cooler conversation. Where, you know, you'd come in the next day at work and be like, "Oh my god, you see that episode?" Game of Thrones is like that now, which I've not watched, and my friends all watch it, and they're all like, "Oh my god, you have to see it."
I'm the same way. I don't have HBO, I haven't seen it.
Oh, my friend loaned me his HBO Go password just for the sake of me catching up, and
you
I
may
just,
not want to mention who that is.
No, I'm not going to. Oh, HBO's okay with this, actually. It's an interesting thing. HBO actually encourages you to share so you can see more of their product.
Uh-huh.
It's very interesting how that works. But it's like, I mean, I watched Vice. I just haven't got really into Game of Thrones because I know I really like it, and I don't have the time to dedicate to binge it. House of Cards, when that comes out, I'm pretty much, I know what I'm doing for like the next 4 days.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to get into conversations with people. It's like this. Like, man, if we would have done this, like, as soon as it came out, it would have been like, oh my god, fire, hammer, like this, that, and this. But to reiterate your statement, I could see this being the best of the 4 seasons thus far, just because the twists and the turns and the character development.
Well, one of the things that I know some people would hold it against them, I actually don't, but you just know in the writer's room, they've got a thing there where they're looking at recent American history, and it's a thing where impeachment, check. Assassination, check. Bribery scandal, check. It's like they're going down and they're invoking all these things that have happened and they're ramming it into the Frank Underwood story. I actually like that. I know it's not universal. You strike me as somebody who probably likes that too.
Oh, I thoroughly enjoy that. I think that's absolutely incredible. And the funny thing, too, is they also did a bit of like foreshadowing into the future, which how could even know that? Mm-hmm. The whole idea of like, because they had a brokered convention,
right.
And a lot of people with the whole candidate-elect Trump, I guess you could say, WWE Hall of Famer, might I add.
That's right.
Donald Trump. I was in the building with him twice, WrestleMania 23 and WrestleMania 20.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, how about that?
Were you catching any of that money coming from the ceiling?
No, I had cheap seats, man. Okay. Donald Trump doesn't take care of the cheap people. And the people who already had money got more.
There's an allegory there politically.
Something, yeah. I don't know what it is. But just the whole concept of how they did like the brokered convention and the fact that, you know, once talk came up for the Republicans, who I'm pretty sure are still not too keen on what's happening with them. I mean, they could make a whole House of Cards season just on real life of how
they
that
could.
Is. I mean, considering my options right now, I'm pretty much leaning towards like I would vote for Frank Underwood, even though he's like not even a real candidate. But even stuff like that, though, like there was a whole talk of like, you know, I haven't really been following as much. But you have like, you know, your conspiracy people, your the conspiracy theorists that talk about, you know, oh, FEMA, and they're building these American internment camps, you know,
right,
stuff like that. You're Alex Joneses. You're welcome for that. It's the only plug you're going to get. that talk about this kind of stuff. And then one of Frank's policies was the America Works program.
Yep.
That was about, you know, getting everybody out there with America Works. And he was basically taking the money from FEMA to create these jobs that didn't exist.
That's right.
And then had to manifest a war to pay for it.
That's right. Had that going on. And then the direction I thought you were going to go in when you mentioned that InfoWars guy was the NSA thing. That was another thing from
this season here
where they sort of invoked Snowden without invoking him directly. But the whole thing about that and just the utter cynicism. And you, it's funny because sometimes, you know, when you're talking, I know Dave Meltzer in wrestling has this thing about heat on the wrestler or heat on the promotion. I'm sort of thinking about that along the lines of this is almost cynicism on the part of the writers as opposed to Frank Underwood, because the notion of Frank Underwood, like, calling somebody up like, I want to know what my opponent just said on his phone call. The notion that we have the ability to monitor things to that degree. That's the screenwriters there being cynical, not so much Frank Underwood.
Yeah, but the interesting thing, though, they're absolutely correct. That is a thing that does happen, and the actually just watched Vice, which if you don't watch Vice on HBO, I highly recommend that show. It's one of the best news sources out there. They actually just interviewed Snowden this past week.
Okay.
They went to Russia and interviewed him. And it's very interesting, like, the line that's divided on Snowden.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's either people view him as a hero, some people view him as a traitor.
Right.
I think he was a traitor for heroic reasons, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I sort of have a foot in both camps. Yeah.
I respect what he did, but the way he did it anyway.
And going to Russia.
Yeah.
You know.
And now he's hiding out in Russia, and the Russians are just like, whatever. But he brought up the point on that, and they kind of make mention of what happened on House of Cards, where it's just like, you know, they have that ability, and it's interesting because what is his opponent? The Republican. I forget his name off the top of my head. It's got to be up here on the list.
Oh, yeah. We have this in front of us here. Dum, 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 dum.
Will Conway.
Yeah, Will Conway.
Yeah. The way they set him up was absolutely perfect. You know, he's the all-American family, and I love how they were so in tune with, like, society. And of that, you know, he took selfies, and he was taking videos and post them to his social media.
Right.
And he had access to, basically, it was Google, but they didn't call it Google.
It was some other thing.
It was some other thing. It was, like, not Google. But it was, like, his own search engine that did, like, data collecting on everybody's stuff.
Right.
So Frank, being Frank, not to be one to be upstage, you can collect data? Well, I have the NSA at my disposal. I'm going to collect everything, which led to that really, really awesome scene where the two of them just shut off their phones and just went into the room and just chatted.
Right. It was, I think Pollywag was the name of it, right? What a kind of a dumb name. Obviously, they wanted to just get as far away from Google as they possibly could, but they were trying to invoke, like you said, it was supposed to be Google. Basically in this universe here. And you're right, it was a fascinating scene. These are the things that would not happen in real life again, but you just sort of have to make allowances for it. In real life, you're not going to have the president of one party and his nominee opponent in the other party in a room together. Nobody else is there. They're just letting down their hair and, you know, BSing. That doesn't happen. But those were fascinating scenes every time they happened. And him and Claire having the Conways at the White House with those kids. And
them getting to know. It's one of those, like, you're like, it was an uneasy tension.
Yes.
It was there. It was, like, very calming and soothing. You see the kids. And, like, me personally watching it, I'm like, Claire will just as much as, like, give your kids cookies and kill them as opposed to, like, you know, no, everything's going to be okay. Stab. It's just kind of like you're waiting for the foot to drop. You know, waiting for something to happen, what was going to take place with them. And it's like, you know, I think there was a line of, like, don't get too comfortable or something to that effect.
There was something like that. Jack Conway also having a British wife. Are they invoking our former local congressman, Dennis Kucinich, in this regard, perhaps?
That's a stretch, but sure.
You
just call him Jack
thought.
Conway?
Or Will Conway.
They could have called him Rob Conway.
Rob Conway. We could keep working. Yeah, he'll always be Rob Conway to me. Will Conway, I stand corrected. Again, an interesting character. But it's a thing, again, too, where, again, for a political nerd like myself, you look at some of the liberties that they're taking. You know, Will Conway, Republican governor of New York, Frank Underwood has already been the congressman from South Carolina previously.
Was
as
he
a
the
Democrat.
Congressman? Is that what it was? What
yes.
his title was?
Okay. He was the House Majority Whip from and the way that it works, and this is going to sound racial, but it's not. The only Democrats that come from South Carolina present day are black Democrats because the state is gerrymandered. So you have the majority black districts like James. God, and this is so ignorant of me. I'm forgetting his last name, but he's like the number three or number four Democrat in the House, a black Democrat from there. White Democrats in the House of Republicans in South Carolina are extinct, basically. Because they've all been, those are all conservative areas. They elect Republicans. So just Underwood being there, you know, in and of itself was kind of, you know, but that's a thing where you can't look too hard at it. You'll kind of like lose your enjoyment. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't think I never would have thought of that until you just brought it up.
So, yeah, I'm not claiming it's relevant to anything, but, it, you know.
I mean, so does Texas have black Democrat election? Congressman.
Texas is very close to that.
Texas is kind of diverse.
Texas may have one or two. Well, you know what it is, too. In some of the areas, Texas, I think, has some Hispanic Democrats that are in the House.
Okay.
But white Democrats in Texas, if there are still any, if they're not close to extinct, they're kind of close. They're either close to extinct or extinct. But it's an interesting thing. So Claire, but that's what's interesting, too, with the racial dynamic. Claire, in trying to get that seat in Texas, I'm glad you mentioned that because that showed her trying to usurp the black congressman's daughter,
yeah,
and trying to take that seat and the dynamic that comes into play of you're not going to be the white usurper that comes in here and does this.
Speaking of that, I absolutely loved, we were talking about like power plays that Claire did. I mm-hmm. love Frank's power play back when he like nominated the congresswoman as, I forget exactly what, he gave her the funding that she needed for whatever she was campaigning for.
That's right.
So I thought that was absolutely fantastic. Where he's like, and Claire's just sitting there like has no choice but to like just like smile and nod and
what
go along.
State of the Union.
During the State of the Union, it's like we're going to put for nobody else, just her, and we're going to point out that what was her name there? Cicely Tyson was playing her. Yeah, yes. There's Congresswoman Doris Jones. You've been campaigning for this, and we're going to give it to you. It's like never once mentioned before. She's like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. Oh, that was so good. So, and the look on his face, Kevin Spacey's face as Frank Underwood as he was doing it. And speaking of, something else I want to bring up, too. Mm-hmm. Major props, a department that never gets enough credit, the makeup department.
Yes.
How they have aged Frank as all presidents mm-hmm. while in office.
That's right.
They age. They have aged him not too much, but if you watch season one compared to season four, and especially after he got shot, they aged him throughout the season even.
Right.
Like, I love how they did that. By the time, you know, the show ends, Kevin Spacey is going to look like an old man.
He is, and that's one of those things, though. I mean, part of it is, you know, we see the before and after pictures of presidents, and, you know, like, it's there with, to an extent, with Obama the way it was with George Bush as far as, like, the lines in the face. But
should see Martin Van Buren's. Holy crap.
Well, the thing that Van Buren, I'm going to exempt him from what I'm going to ask you about, like, Bush and Obama, but, like, because, like, it was 1800s technology back then. Bush and Obama, look, Reagan had his bro cream for 8 years. You do realize your hair doesn't have to go gray in 2016, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean,
but I
don't understand that.
It's one of those things where they kind of are, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's like a right, like Bill Clinton, you know, his hair was kind of already gray. But like you mentioned Obama. Oh, if you look at 2008 Obama compared to now, oh, man, he has aged a lot. And it's the most stressful job. It's the most unappreciated and one of the most stressful jobs that you could possibly have. I mean, I could see the level of what goes on with this. I personally think it's put on too high of a pedestal. And that's a whole other topic of conversation. You and I, we've had discussions off air. I am anti-two-party dictatorship, but I've kind of moved away, like myself personally, that I want Senate and Congress reform.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very interesting. Every 4 years, they throw these presidential candidates out in front of us. And right now, I mean, like, if you look at the two options we have right now,
right.
I'm looking at this thing going, like, seriously?
Right.
That's our only choice? Like, I saw this guy at WrestleMania 23 get stumped by Stone Cold Steve Austin. And she's just a liar.
Yeah.
Like, she's just a manipulative liar. And it's like, and I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent libertarian with a lowercase L. And you look at both of these, and it's like, everyone gets it's like pro wrestling again.
Right.
They sell this thing, and that's what I love about House of Cards, because House of Cards like exploits this and kind of it's so House of Cards is very close to reality.
It is.
It's I mean it's satire, but there's a lot of things you see in there, and it's like, you know, we mentioned Snowden and the NSA.
Mm-hmm.
That's a thing. PBS did a whole Frontline special on how they are still spying on American people.
Right.
In the names of, quote, unquote, I'm doing air quotes here, people, safety.
Yes, it's like, exactly.
So,
you know, and you're right about all that, Jake. You know, again, there's a lot of overlap between where you're at, as I've said previously on the show, a paleocon. I am a nominal Republican, but not really a loyalist. I voted Constitution Party last time. I probably will again. I'm actually going to be... Here's a scoop. I'm actually hunting down the Constitution Party nominee, hopeful of getting him on. And
oh, that'd be awesome. I'm pretty sure they'll need any media exposure they can get. So
I'm
going to
say, yeah. I mean, I think the phrase, you'll never get a softer conversation, would be the magic words.
I actually, my friends of mine, I was going to watch it, but unfortunately, I had to work, the Libertarian debate.
Okay.
A lot of people were saying that, like, Gary Johnson's now only, he's like the new entitled one. He pretty much just got it because he's him.
Right.
I didn't get a chance to see the debate or, like, do the follow-up as I years past me, it just, we've been friends through what? That's been like our fourth election cycle now,
yeah,
I think
so.
I've just been so broken down, which I think is how they win.
Yeah.
It's just, I'm just so, I mean, 2008, Jake would have been like, you know, watching it and campaigning, you'd be like, blah, 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 blah. 2016,
right.
Jake's just kind of like, you know what? You're going to do what you want to do anyway.
It's oh,
like,
yeah.
I can present all the facts in the world to you, and you're just going to be, and the people are going to go the way of whatever sounds good.
Well, and that's where the show has sort of, again, and because of it being filmed in 2015 and couldn't quite anticipate the climate of this year, that's where it does sort of diverge away from the present choice that we have, because Frank Underwood essentially embodies both of the major candidates here. And you have Conway as somebody who's the fresh alternative, JFK 2K16, whatever.
I like that.
And thank you. And Underwood, he basically realizes, I have to win by doing a burn it to the ground kind of a thing, and that you can't want to go for this guy. But it's a thing where, as far as the choices that we have this year, this is one of the things it reminds me of in pop culture from, I think it's 1970, the John Lennon, Yoko Ono thing, war is over if you want it, which, again, that was just with their goofy peacenik crap. But by the same token, it's kind of the same thing here. It's like, American people, you do realize there's more than two names on the ballot, don't you? For everybody that cries about, I can't believe this is our choice, you know, I'm going to get on my soapbox for a second. If we just went out there and had free minds and wanted to vote for whoever we wanted to, whoever was the best out of all of the group here, that wouldn't be the case, Jake.
You're right, and actually, this is all my fault.
How
for
so?
Years, I was campaigning and saying that we needed a celebrity to run for president that had money and didn't really care. Well, I got my wish, but this isn't who I was thinking.
Right.
I was actually thinking Tom Hanks, because who doesn't love Tom Hanks? Like, seriously, we could send Tom Hanks to talk to any country, and they'd be like, we got death to America! Next thing I was like, hey, here's Tom Hanks. Oh, we like his movies. He's nice. It's like, everybody loves Tom Hanks. You've never met anybody out there that's like, yeah, screw Tom Hanks. No, there's nothing. My aunt's actually friends with Tom Hanks from her job as a working in Hollywood, the award shows, and she's had conversations. They sat next to each other, and like Tom Hanks actually introduced my aunt to his wife, so like they're on a one-on-one basis. So
right.
It's like, I'm like, he seems like a cool guy. Vote on somebody like that. Nope, that's not what we got. And on this situation, I honestly think that if you look at like the history of this, Donald Trump was a Democrat.
Right.
He's a friend with Hillary Clinton.
Most of
I don't
his career,
care
yeah.
what they tell you on TV, what they're going to promote in this quote unquote campaign against each other. They
right.
are still friends.
That's right.
They are still friends with each other. My belief is that he got into this as a joke. Like, he got into it as a publicity stunt, basically.
Right.
Like, hey, I'll get in there, you know, I'll say a couple stupid things, whatever, blah, 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 and I'll get out, you know, and I'll just sell a book or something.
Right.
Problem is, he kept winning because what he said, which is what I agree with him on, when he started pointing out the money in politics, that I've known this for years, you've known this for years, but a lot of people out there didn't know. I mean, it wasn't. They knew it, but it was like out of sight, out of mind, because no one said it. So they're
right.
like, "Well, it's kind of like, you know, you know your teenage kid's out drinking with his friends, but you just pretend that it's not as long as he gets home safe."
Right.
I mean, that's a thing that does happen. it's kind of like that where the people were like, you know, as soon as he came out and said, like, you know, oh, yeah, I gave money to all these people. Mm-hmm. That's what attracted so many people. And then it kind of took a turn where he started making all the racist comments. And next thing you know, man, so many I hate to use this term, but it's a truth. White entitled bigots came out of nowhere that are just like, you know, yeah, it's like the whole stupid thing about a wall. I'm like, okay, do you realize what a wall does? A wall does not only keep people out, it also keeps you in.
Right.
That's how I view it. You put a wall around something, yeah, you're protected from everything outside of it, but guess what? You're also entrapped by whatever's in there.
Right. It's the authoritarian impulse that's going to keep us in. You know, someday in the future, in some dystopian future when somebody else is president and wants to make sure we don't leave. You're right about that.
I mean, there's absolutely no way that's ever going to happen. That wall's not getting built.
No, I don't believe
half
it either.
Half the stuff he says is never. I mean, that's one of those, it's like, you know, man, I mean.
But it's one of those things, though, you know, you don't know if life imitates art or art imitates life, because I've already mentioned in the course of this discussion all the real life events of the last couple of decades in presidential terms that have gone on. But you look at now, you look at the circumstance of all these things with Trump, and like I said, the Trump v. Conway choice does not mirror what we've got going on with the show here.
A
lot of the stuff Trump's doing is very Underwood-like, which is very, very interesting. He's doing things now that put us more in mind of Trump. And occasionally Hillary Clinton will, as you say, do some stuff that kind of puts us in mind of Trump. But of Frank Underwood. So it's fascinating in that way, because the Clintons have their own connections through the Clinton Foundation and everything they've had going on with their donors the last couple of decades. So both sides are invoking Underwood an awful lot.
Speaking of donors, back to House of Cards on here, man, when I was watching it, when Doug called the woman of which the guy that she killed her husband, I'm like, don't do it, Doug. Because the whole thing with Doug is he never shows. Like, I always, the thing I love that character.
His impulses are horrible.
He shows. He's very tactful. It's like, okay, better do this. This has to be done. But like at the same time, it's like he's supposed to kill. I always called her Rachel the prostitute.
Uh-huh.
It's like, and the whole time going through, it's like he developed kind of like a little thing for her. And
right.
Like with this woman, I'm like, Doug, you're going to expose yourself. You're
right.
Going to expose yourself. This is what's going to happen. And then he ends up like falling off the wagon, and it's like, oh man. Don't want to see that, but it's like, I know, I always, that's, Michael Kelly does such an amazing job as Doug Stamper.
He's really good, and Wendy Moniz, in her role there, too, I told you off air, I remember her from Guiding Light, and she was really good in that role, I thought. She is somebody who, her wheelhouse is handling characters who are dealing with tragedy and pressure and everything like that. So as the widow of this woman, it's a fascinating thing, because you think ahead to season five, it's like, is he literally just going to break down and confess to her that he's the reason her husband's dead? And oh, by the way, he did do a great service for the country. He kept the president alive. You know,
yeah.
What's he going to do?
Like, what did you gain? Nothing by doing this. And it's like, you know, when but you got to remember how it started too. The whole thing started because he did the donation, but he didn't do it anonymously. I thought he did it anonymously,
right.
But he didn't. He did a $5,000 donation to the fund, and it was just some random. They're like, well, this is kind of odd.
Well, the whole thing, too, and it's stemming from, what was it, blackmailing the Surgeon General to move the president to the top of the donor list?
Yes.
I mean, that was.
It was like, he's the president of the United States. I don't care who he is. It's like, I don't think you understand. It's like, that was pretty impressive. Oh, by the way, I'm looking on here at the how about the absolute great cameos from Corey Stoll and Kate Mara, Zoe Barnes and Peter Russo, and Frank's in his coma.
The ghost
dream. Oh man, was that awesome! I was like, this is getting trippy and weird.
It is. It really, really was. And they had some great callbacks. The great Gerald McRaney getting a cameo as they brought back Raymond Tusk, however briefly, in the investigation of the story. And that was what was fascinating, was that the entire season was building to this whole kind of a thing. Tom Hammerschmidt coming back into the picture here. Well, this was in the aftermath of what happened with Lucas. He was putting together the puzzle pieces. For Lucas Goodwin to go so far off the deep end that he ends up assassinating the president, but I guess he would have been pretty distraught. I was shocked at where they went as far as, what was he? Was he out on work release early on? Is that what it
yeah,
was?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, he was in one of those like halfway houses work releases, and he pretty much
because
I didn't
he did
see
some
that.
Spying
yeah.
for them. Yeah,
he
for the government.
I think that situation. I actually kind of liked where I liked where they went with that because he was. It was the desperate actions of a desperate man
mm-hmm.
because he met up, I believe it was Heather Dunbar,
right.
that he had set up a secret meeting with, and
right.
I forget who he had spoken with that got him the meeting. And he was like, was it Jackie or was it somebody? I forget who it was that set up the meeting for him.
I think it was.
And he's like, she's like, I can't have this conversation. He's like, you don't understand. Like, you have to listen to me. And then after, you know, everything came out, that's when Heather kind of was like, oh, wait, he was telling the truth the whole time.
Right.
And it was just one of those, like, it was a desperate action of a desperate man. He had no other option other than to, like, you know, the way to bring this thing to light. And then the way, you know, it's one of the many things I love about this show. You had just mentioned Tom.
Mm-hmm.
The way they bring a character back, like the way every character kind of develops. At first, you know, he was the cynical editor-in-chief of the paper.
Right.
It was like, you know, I don't want to do anything to do with this. But then again, as more and more stuff comes along, that's when they kind of see and realize that, like, as he gets more evidence, he sees Lucas was onto something, and
right.
he was saying something. I'm very intrigued to see where this goes in season five, because they kind of ended it going, okay, well, we need to go to war
yeah.
in order to get people to forget about this.
The ultimate wag the dog kind of a thing, that Frank and Claire, in the end, more or less encouraged that head chopping to be on live TV to try to distract people. The story ultimately hits. You talk about the desperation of Lucas, by the way, and everything. Not least of which, at the point where, in order to, I think, get access to the transportation that he needed to get back and forth from his situation, to actually go so far as to blow a guy, yeah, that really was desperation.
Yeah. Oh, man, I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
I think I blocked that one out of my memory.
I wish I could.
I completely forgot that took place. Yeah, but also, again, it defined the character of the desperate means of what he had to do in order to get what he needed,
right.
because he knew he was the only one who had the truth of what was out there.
Right.
Sounds
right.
like the X-Files, which, by the way, was also a great little mini show. Just point that out.
It was. But the thing, the way that they did it, when Frank went out there, he was shaking hands. He was on campus, and I think it was South Carolina. It was in D.C. where he was out there. He was shaking hands with the students. This was where Frank was at a low point as far as his popularity. Things were going sideways here. Ultimately, Heather ends up, once Frank gets shot, getting driven out of the race because her ties to Lucas, innocent though they were, came to light and she looked bad. But it's a thing where I didn't know the assassination was coming, but I knew Lucas was working on something deep and dark. But like when Frank was there, the way they were shooting it and the whole thing of where he's just going through this gauntlet and everybody's up his ass and everybody hates him and the students are... It reminded me a little bit of... Have you ever heard the stories of like when Nixon would go out and like try to talk to the protesters and whatever?
Vaguely.
It almost put me in mind of that. But it's a thing of like, I didn't know the assassination attempt was going to happen. They did a great job. But I knew they were foreshadowing something heavy. Were you getting the same vibe?
Oh, yeah. Especially okay. with the camera angles and everything.
Yes.
Everything was slowed down. You kind of saw from Frank's perspective.
Right.
You saw the perspective of, like, everything was just a blur.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when he's just out there like, oh, how you doing? Bah, boo! And all these like, people in his face, boo! Yelling.
Right.
It's like you knew something was going to happen.
That's
it was
right.
Just, and then when it happened, I was one of those, oh, wow! It was one of those OMG moments, as the kids say these days.
Yeah. And then the way that it went down, we invoke this with Claire, the vice president, and bringing him into her orbit, working with the vice president, who at this point, he's got all the power, at least on paper. Doug Stamper is trying to maneuver to try to keep, you know, the center of power.
The best is the vice president. He's like, I have no idea what I'm doing. It's like, why am I in here? Like, pretty much, it was Claire. Like,
yeah.
Everything was all Claire.
Right.
She used her, again, powers of manipulation very, very well in of that she's like, yeah, hey, why didn't you, like, if you need any help, I'm here to help you. And he's like, oh, thank God, because I have no idea what's happening. Because Frank wouldn't tell him anything.
No.
He literally said, he's like, I had to give him the job just to shut him up.
No, exactly. He was totally out of the loop. But one of these things here where, again, they start delving into this, and subsequently she ends up making a deal with Russian President Victor Petrov, who is in no way based on any real-life world figure.
Was Putin just not available to play that role?
I guess. But that's. But how are we in a universe? Think about this. I mean, this is, you know, Alex Jones might have a hard time. There's his name again. He might have a hard time answering this question. We must have gone through a vortex here, because this is a universe where Petrov exists and is the president of Russia. But do you remember his season 3 nemesis, Pussy Riot? Think about that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, buddy. Hmm. You could go insane pondering that thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
The look in your
eyes. I forgot all about that.
Yeah, think about that. Think about that. Putin does not exist in this world. So it's really interesting how it went. And, again, they end up working out a deal. What was it with the Chinese, basically, I think, to put the squeeze on Russia and kind of turn the tables a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, there was something with, like, they allowed China to put their ship somewhere or something like that.
That's right. It was some kind of, like, Kissinger-esque great power diplomacy. So, you know, it was a great thing that they ended up doing there. But, yeah, it was the break right at mid-season there. And then, you know, subsequently, again, all the stuff in the second half. But most of which I think we've touched on here. But the way they leave it, you know, the big cliffhanger for the next season, everything has dropped. As far as all the allegations in that article, and then the ISIS wannabes subsequently carrying out the beheadings,
dominant sub-dom-sub relationship between Doug and Seth.
Yes.
Every time Seth does anything, he's like, I'm going to beat your butt. It's like, yeah. What is this? What is he talking about?
Yeah, so it's all going to drop now, season 5, I guess, March 2017. So,
March 2017.
That's when it's going to be coming out next. So any thoughts on what we got as we bring it full circle here to kind of?
Jackie and Remy are going to have a baby.
Could be. Well,
why not?
Yeah. Well, they kind of openly were getting together there at the end, were they not?
One other thing. Oh, yeah. No, okay. They were openly together. Okay. Because they both said, are you out? I'm out. And they might be leaving the show. I don't know. They might be out there. Because they didn't really have much to do with their characters anyway.
That might be what they mean by out.
Yeah. I mean, but I love one thing also that we failed to mention. How about when Freddie just tells off Frank?
Right.
When he's leaving the White House, and he just tells him off, and he's just like, I am the President of the United States. You're an asshole. So good.
But he curb stomps Tom out in the alley when Tom tries to get him to be a snitch.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. Yeah. Freddie still has his core values.
Right.
Freddie is still Freddie. But at the same time, like, Frank got all this way and all this stuff that, you know, mm-hmm. he got Freddie the job and everything, and it's kind of like the attitude of Freddie's like, I'm supposed to be entitled to you. I'm leaving. Goodbye. Like, I forgot all about Freddie until like that scene happened. I forgot that Frank got him the job working in the grounds crew for the White House.
Right.
And then he's like, Frank, you're an asshole.
That
so
was
good.
That was a major moment right there. But early speculation about season 5 that Frank might die and Claire might take over. What do you think about that?
I don't see that happening.
You don't see that?
No, because I mean,
what about at the end?
If
do it like the British House of Cards?
Maybe. I never saw the British House of Cards.
Well,
so
the First Lady in Great Britain didn't take over, but she was like the power behind it. Basically, I don't want to.
You can spoil that. You can spoil.
Right.
We said it's a spoiler episode.
Okay. Well, he had reached the end of his usefulness, and he had kind of gone off the deep end, and she already, like, had squirreled away enough money, so it was like, okay, it's time for him to go.
Okay.
So
I mean, I can see that happening.
Claire would actually be the vice president, assuming they get elected, which I don't think there's any way they're not getting elected, right? I mean, that's the point of this.
Yeah, that's the whole purpose, is that you would think that, I mean, I have a feeling that there's not going to be an election. I mean, if we're going off the deep end, mm-hmm. what if Frank declares martial law?
Could
and
be.
Says that because they went to war.
Suspend what, habeas corpus?
Habeas corpus. And, you know, declares martial law, and there isn't an election.
Right.
And I think that could be a direction. I mean, all bets are off on this. And it's one of these things where it's like, you know, that's, again, in touch with society. That's one of those, the conspiracy theorists again.
Right.
Like, you know, Obama's going to plan this thing and not allow the election to happen and stay in office forever, which I never believed, but okay.
Yeah.
What if they did that? That'd be a fascinating twist. And then next thing you know all the people are like, you know, this is BS against it, and them using their powers of manipulation. I could see that coming back. Like, my question is, how long do you go with this show? How many seasons do you go?
It's only going to be the fifth season. I think that's the end. And Bo Willimon, who is the creator of it, I understand, is not coming back to be executive producer. So what's very interesting is they leave it at this critical moment. And that's the end of the previous executive producer. Somebody else is picking up the baton. So, I mean, is it going to be like, what was it, season four of Community? I mean, is it going to be one of those kind of a deals? Or
you never know.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, because you don't want it to, like, I thought, like, Breaking Bad had the greatest five seasons, I do believe.
Yeah.
And it was done.
Right.
And it's like, it left you wanting more, but at the same time, it didn't overstay its welcome.
It told a complete story.
It told a complete story. Like, and I think, I mean, there's only so much you can do with this based on the fact that, okay, he's, I mean, you could end it this season coming up if he loses the election.
Right.
I mean, if Frank dies, the show's over.
Right.
Frank is, I mean, as good as, no one's going to want to watch a show. I mean, I will watch it, but
right.
it won't be nearly as good. And you can do the ghost flashbacks. That's stupid. It's like, if Frank dies, it's, that's it. I mean, there's, where else do you go? I mean, the Claire story, it's, they're a dynamic that feeds off of one to the other. It's basically the story of both of them. If one goes, then it's like, okay, Claire becomes, then you can, I mean, you could go somewhere with it, but that's a completely separate show.
The one thing, well, where people are getting the sense that it might be Claire taking over, maybe he dies, is for the first time at the end of season four, Claire breaks the fourth wall.
Yes, I loved that.
Yeah,
and
they both
like,
did.
They both looked, and it's like, what was their line? Something to the effect of, we are fear?
Yeah, something
and they're both
like
talking,
that.
They both turn and look. It's like, we are fear. Yeah, I like that where she's in. It gave me chills just thinking about that again.
Yeah.
I'm like, holy crap, it's like, they're united on a united front. They both have the power.
That was an insane old moment when that happened. It really was a defining moment. But that's what makes you wonder going into the next season where this is going ultimately. And the one thing that, again, sort of does tie back to what's happening now with Trump is everything that's out there about Trump and how in the Republican primaries he was bulletproof because it was like there was like, for the people that were for him, there was nothing you could say at that point. Now, Frank Underwood has never been that kind of a guy. Frank Underwood has always been the guy who's had to stay one step ahead of his liabilities. For the first time now, he, like Trump, has everything out there. This Hammerschmidt expose, we've been waiting four seasons for that to happen. I don't want to say it felt anticlimactic when it did, because especially the way that they handle it with the war stuff as a diversion may ultimately work. But having it all out there and the whole thing of, and again, it's not like Frank's not copping to any of this, but all the accusations on the record, and even the former president, Garrett Walker, big patsy that he always was, finally being like, yeah, you know what? I think he did kind of dick me over. You know, that's what's going to be interesting to see the fallout on that, because that's one of the big things we've been waiting four seasons for.
And I think that's what's going to lead to in season five, where it's going to be where the people want him out, but mm-hmm. he has to use whatever, because the whole series is about Frank using his manipulative powers. He became the president of the United States without ever winning an election.
Right.
So then I don't think he's going to win the next election. I think that's going to be the whole thing. I think he's going to suspend habeas corpus because of a war
okay.
and try to divert everything, because, I mean, his numbers are going to be plummetingly horrible, horribly bad once this gets, if they go in the way it seems they are. I think, you know, he's got to do whatever it takes. He's obsessed with the power, and I think he's going to do whatever's necessary, and that's what this war leads to. And then next thing you know, we're going to have, you know, an entire country at war, which will be very interesting to see what levels of which they go to from there.
That's right. That's right. So you have that as a possibility. It's going to be fascinating. I'm going to guess that at the very end of the series that they probably ape the House of Cards thing from Britain and probably kill him off and maybe put Claire in. Because that would – here's the thing. If he gets reelected, right, and it's season five, what are you going to do? I'm always thinking of, like, how do you end a show? You don't end a show that's based around Frank Underwood where he's got 3 years left as president.
Yeah, no, you don't end it like that at all. The show has to end with Frank getting his comeuppance.
Yeah.
Frank has to. It's like Walter White, you know? As much as you love the Walter White character, as much mm-hmm. as I love the Frank Underwood character, he has to. He's the bad guy. He's the villain. He has to get his comeuppance.
Can they do impeachment? I mean, they already did it on Walker.
He has to die.
Yeah, that's what
I'm thinking.
It's the only way out.
It's the only way out. Because, I mean, had he just died, he's a murderer. He's a cold-blooded killer. He's murdered
right.
people on this series not
right.
more than once.
Right.
He's, I mean, you could even argue that he murdered the guy at the end of season four. He let it happen.
He did.
It wasn't by his hand, but he didn't do anything to stop it.
Right.
So I think it's one of those things where Frank has to die. Now, how Frank dies, who kills Frank, what happens, that may be something completely out of left field we don't see happening, mm-hmm. or it could be something as Claire kills him.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
Wouldn't that be an interesting twist?
Yeah.
And then I'd be okay with it just ends with her just looking at the camera and goes, now things have changed, or something to that.
Well, that would be fascinating, because on the British series, there actually was I think he was even named Stamper. He basically served like the same role. Although, come to think of it, he was one of the ones who got cast aside, who I think got killed. The guy who was the ultimate behind-the-scenes enforcer for Frank was in the pocket, ultimately, when push came to shove, of the First Lady rather than the Prime Minister. But this is a thing where Stamper's the ultimate loyalist to Frank. This is where it's different than the British version. He's going down with the ship. So if it becomes, once again, to her versus Frank, it's her versus Frank and Stamper, which is another...
It's a whole other plot twist that gets thrown in there. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see. Honestly, we could speculate here for hours.
Yeah, could go anyway.
I mean, yeah.
I think he's got to die also. I'm with you on this.
Yeah, I think that's the only possible ending you can do is that Frank dies.
That's it. All right, so that's what we're on the record for. Is there anything else that you're expecting for season 5?
Everything we just expected is probably not going to happen, and they're going to go on a completely separate twist, because what I was expecting for season 4 was completely separate.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. There's a lot of stuff I didn't see coming. As far as the people who were added to the cast here, whether it be campaign professional Nev Campbell.
I loved her, by the way. She's absolutely amazing.
She really is.
It's like it was that role was perfect for her. She was, you know, it's like and it's funny, before we started recording this, I was like, I just referred to her as Nev Campbell the whole time. I didn't even know she had a name on the show.
Well, like, I don't know.
I could have called her, what was her name in Scream? Sydney Prescott.
Yeah.
Like, Sydney Prescott's looking hot in those business suits.
Yeah, Nev was doing a great job of rocking those. But two that were from Deadwood, although they've been in previous seasons as well, Kim Dickens and Molly Parker. I don't know if you ever saw Deadwood or not.
I did not.
Completely different type roles, obviously, although given that it was like 1876, I guess in a miner's camp, I guess it would be different types of roles.
Yeah.
But, you know, I realized the contradiction as I was saying it, Jake. But that's a tribute to where they are as actresses. But the casting continues to be top-notch. Whatever happens in season 5, I'm sure that is going to be a constant as well. I mean, this is a who's who of a lot of today's great actors that have been a part of this. I mean, you went back to Corey Stahl and how it was nice to see him in there again as Peter Russo.
Who, by the way, kicked butt in Ant-Man.
Right.
Like, people from this have gone on to do amazing things. Kate Mara, we won't hold Fantastic Four against her. She has had an awesome career other than that, which, by the way, funny story on Fantastic Four. I was going to see that movie, the new one, the remake. I was going to go see that in the theater, and I was all ready to go, and I walked out to the theater, and I was all like, okay, you know, I'm on my way, blah, blah, blah. And I was walking up to the Highland, and it was like a cosmic force told me, don't go in there and see this. You're going to regret this. This is a decision you will hate. And I'm literally standing in the theater looking and going like, I want to watch this. Do I? No, like the gods are like, don't do it. Sure enough, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go home. I'm going to wait for the reviews to come out. And if they say it's awesome, I'll go the next day. Reviews came out, and I was like, that was the smartest decision. It's on HBO right now. I've still yet to watch it.
See, you did the right thing. You absolutely did the right thing. I knew I was forgetting somebody in terms of the casting, because they're not on the Wikipedia page for season 4 because they weren't in season 4. Season 5 needs to have, particularly if we're going back to this NSA stuff, which I'm sure we are, needs to have Jimmy Simpson as a completist of both Hap and Leonard and Philly, Always Sunny in Philly. We need more Jimmy Simpson in season 5.
I agree with that. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, I was missing him in this one here. I didn't realize that until right now as we're skimming down the list here. But, yeah, the casting continues to be awesome. The story has been amazing. Again, I loved season 4 as much as you did. Season 5, uncharted territory with a new helm for the creative team here. So we shall see how it goes. But a pleasure breaking it down. I had done so solo in unspoiled form. I was looking forward to doing the spoilered version with you, Jake. Thank you so much, as always.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Rick.
A lot of fun, buddy. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to this mini episode of the FDH Lounge.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.